nothing but uncertainty. It's deeply unsettling. Surely I should remember something. Anna stirs. Her eyes flicker open and find mine. Thank God.
What's wrong?
She blanches, and she sits up, her face strained by her concern. Welch has just left.
And?
I lived with the fucker. The words are barely audible.
Lived? With Jack?
Swallowing down my agitation, I nod.
You're related?
Anna's shock is palpable. No, good God, no. Frowning, she moves over and tugs back the duvet. It's an invitation to join her. I don't hesitate. I need her to anchor me to the now and to help me make sense of this alarming news and this huge gap in my memory. Right now, I'm untethered from everything. Kicking off my shoes and clutching the photographs, I slip in beside her and drape an arm over her upper thighs as I lay my head in her lap. Slowly, she trails her fingers through my hair. The gesture is comforting, and it calms my troubled soul.
I don't understand,
she says. Closing my eyes, I picture Welch and recall the throaty rasp of his voice as he briefed me. I repeat his words for Anna, editorializing a little. After I was found with the crack whore, before I went to live with Carrick and Grace, I was in the care of the state of Michigan. I lived in a foster home. I pause and take a gulp of air. But I can't remember anything about that time. Anna's hand stops and rests on my head.
For how long?
2 months or so. I have no recollection.
Have you spoken to your mom and dad about it?
No.
Perhaps you should. Maybe they could fill in the blanks.
I tighten my hold on Anna, my life raft. Here. I pass her the photographs. I've been poring over them in the hope that they might stir a dormant memory that's buried deep. The first depicts a scrubby little house with a cheery yellow front door. The second shows an ordinary working-class couple and their three scrawny, unremarkable children, plus Jackson Hyde as an 8-year-old and me. I'm 4 years old, a small scrap of humanity, with wild, haunted eyes and threadbare clothes, clutching a filthy blanket. It's obvious that the 4-year-old is severely malnourished. No wonder I'm always nagging Anna to eat.
This is you,
Anna gasps and stifles a sob. That's me. My voice is bleak. Right now, I've no words of comfort left for her. I've got nothing. I'm numb. I stare out at the dusk. The sky is streaked in pale pink and orange that heralds the coming darkness, a darkness that claims me as one of its own. A husk of a man once more, hollowed and empty. I'm missing time, missing a part of myself that I didn't even know existed, and I don't understand why. I'm scared to know why. What happened to me back then? How could I have forgotten it all? I cling to the residual anger that simmers beneath the surface. It's aimed at Carrick and Grace. Why the fuck didn't they tell me? I close my eyes. I don't want the darkness. I've lived in it too long. I want the light that Anna brings.
Welch brought these photos?
She asks. Yes, I don't remember any of this.
Remember being with foster parents? Why should you? Christian, it was a long time ago. Is this what's worrying you?
I remember other things from before and after, when I met my mom and dad. But this, it's like there's a huge chasm.
Is Jack in this picture?
Yes, he's the older kid. Anna's silent for a moment, and I hug her harder.
When Jack called to tell me he had Mia,
she murmurs.
He said if things had been different, it could have been him.
Revulsion shudders through me.
That fucker. You think he did all this because the Greys adopted you instead of him?
Who knows? I don't give a fuck about him.
Perhaps he knew we were seeing each other when I went for that job interview. Perhaps he planned to seduce me all along.
Anna's dread echoes in her voice. I don't think so. The searches he did on my family didn't start until a week or so after you began your job at SIP. Barney knows the exact dates. And Anna, he fucked all his assistants and taped them. Anna's quiet, and I wonder what she's thinking. About Hyde? About me? I could have ended up like Hyde if I hadn't been adopted. Is she comparing me to him? Fuck, I am like Hyde. A monster. Is that what she sees? That we're the same? What a repulsive thought.
Christian, I think you should talk to your mom and dad.
She squirms, and I release her legs, but she shuffles down into the bed so we're facing each other.
Let me call them,
she offers in a tender whisper. I shake my head.
Please,
she pleads. Her expression is as compassionate and sincere as ever, her eyes brimming with love. Perhaps she's not comparing me to Hyde. Should I call my parents? Maybe they can offer the missing pieces on these fragments of my past. They're bound to remember, surely. I'll call them, I murmur.
Good. We can go see them together, or you can go. Whichever you prefer.
No, they can come here.
Why?
I don't want you going anywhere.
Christian, I'm up for a car journey.
No. I give her a lopsided smile. Anyway, it's Saturday night. They're probably at some function.
Call them. This news has obviously upset you. They might be able to shed some light.
Anna's words are stirring. As I gaze into her eyes, there's no judgment there, only her love shining through the cracks into my darkness. Okay. I'll play it her way. I pick up the bedside phone and call my parents home. Anna snuggles up to me while I wait for an answer. Christian. Carrick's voice has never been more welcome. They're home. Dad. I can't hide my surprise.
Great to hear from you, son. How's Anna?
Anna's good. We're home. Welch has just left. He found out the connection.
Connection? With what? With who? Hyde?
The foster home in Detroit. Carrick is silent on the other end of the phone. I don't remember any of that. My voice wavers as my shame and simmering anger surface, a poisonous cocktail. Anna hugs me tighter.
Christian, why should you? It was long ago, but your mother and I can fill in the gaps, I'm sure.
Yeah? I hate the hope in my voice.
We'll come over.
Now, if you like.
You will?
I can scarcely believe it.
Of course. I'll bring some paperwork from that time with me. We'll be there soon. It will be good to see Anna, too.
Paperwork.
Great.
I hang up and regard Anna's curious expression. They're on their way. I still can't hide my surprise. I ask my parents for help, and they come running.
Good. I should get dressed,
Anna says. I tighten my hold on her.
Don't go.
Okay.
She bathes me in a loving smile, and she snuggles once more into my side. Anna and I stand arm in arm in the doorway of the living room to welcome my parents. My mother lights up when she sees Anna, her joy and gratitude obvious to each of us. Reluctantly, I release my wife into my mother's embrace.
Anna, Anna, darling Anna,
she says, and I have to strain to hear her.
Saving two of my children. How can I ever thank you?
Yep, Mom's right. She saved me, too. Dad hugs Anna, his eyes shining with paternal affection. He kisses her forehead. From behind them, Mia, whom I wasn't expecting, appears and pulls Anna into a fierce hug.
Thank you for saving me from those assholes.
Anna winces.
Mia, careful! She's in pain!
My shout startles everyone. Of course, they brought Mia because Mom doesn't want to let her out of her sight. She was drugged and kidnapped only a few days ago. My irritation at my baby sister evaporates.
Oh, sorry,
she says goofily.
I'm good,
Anna says, giving Mia a tight smile. Mia barrels over to me and curls her arm around me.
Don't be so grumpy,
she scolds me quietly. I scowl at her, and she pouts playfully at me. Damn. I hug her tightly to my side. Thank God she's okay. My mother joins us, and I hand her the photographs from Welch. Grace examines the picture of the family. She sucks in a breath and covers her mouth. Dad joins us and winds his arm around her shoulders as he also scrutinizes the family picture.
Oh, darling.
Grace reaches up and places her palm against my cheek, her eyes stricken with shock and dismay. Why? Did she not want me to know about this? Taylor interrupts us.
Mr. Gray, Miss Kavanaugh, her brother and your brother are coming up, sir.
What the hell?
Thank you, Taylor.
I called Elliot and told him we were coming over.
Mia pipes up.
It's a welcome home party.
Mom and Dad share an exasperated look. Anna's glance is sympathetic.
We'd better get some food together. Mia, will you give me a hand? Oh, I'd love to.
She grabs Anna's hand and they head over into the kitchen area. Mom and Dad follow me into my study, and I offer them each a seat in front of my desk. I lean back against it, suddenly aware that this is how my father would perch in his study as I stood in front of him while he lectured me about my latest misdemeanor. The tables have been well and truly turned, and the irony is not lost on me. I need answers, and they're here. So presumably they're willing to shed some light on this dark chapter in my life. I mask my anger and gaze at both of them expectantly. Grace is the first to speak, her voice clear and authoritative, her doctor's voice.
This photograph, these are the Colliers. They were your foster parents. You had to go to them once your biological mother died because under state law we had to wait to see if you had any relatives who would claim you.
Oh. Her voice drops.
We had to wait for you. It was agonizing. 2 whole months.
She closes her eyes, as if reliving the pain. It's sobering. My anger melts away as my breath catches in my throat. I cough to hide my emotion. In the picture. I gesture to the photograph Grace is holding. The boy with red hair. That's Jack Hyde. Carrick leans in, and they examine the photograph together.
I don't remember him, my father muses.
Mom shakes her head, a forlorn look on her face.
No, me neither. We only had eyes for you, Christian.
Were they kind? I ask haltingly, my voice a shadow. The Colliers? Grace's eyes fill with tears.
Oh, darling, they were wonderful. Mrs. Collier doted on you.
Silently, I blow out a breath of relief. I wondered. I couldn't remember. Grace's eyes widen with understanding. She reaches out and grips my hand, hazel eyes beseeching mine.
Christian, you were a traumatized child. You wouldn't or couldn't speak. You were skin and bone. I can't even imagine the horrors you endured in your early life. But that ended with the Colliers.
She squeezes my hand, willing me to believe her.
They were good people.
I wish I could remember them, I whisper. She stands and takes my hand.
There's no reason why you should. It felt like forever for us, because we wanted you so badly. But it was only 2 months. We'd already been approved to adopt, thank goodness. Otherwise, the process could have been longer.
Here, Carrick says. It must be harrowing not knowing, but I have a few things from that time for you. Maybe they might help you remember.
From inside his jacket, he produces a large envelope. I sit down at my desk, steel myself, and open it. Inside, I find a resume for Mr. and Mrs. Collier and details about their family, a daughter and two sons, several letters and two drawings. My drawings? I gaze down at them and my scalp tingles with a sense of wonder. Both pictures are in crayon. They're a scrawled child's view of a house with a yellow door. There are stick figures, two adults, five siblings. The sun shines over them all, huge, bright. The second picture is similar, but all the children are holding what look like sugar cones with ice cream. It appears happy enough.
We had reports on you every week from them, and we visited every weekend.
Why didn't you tell me?
Grace and Carrick exchange a look.
It never came up, son.
Carrick's jaw tightens, his voice quiet with remorse, I think, as he shrugs.
We wanted you to forget about all.
He trails off. I nod. I get it. Forget about my life with the crack whore. Forget about her pimp. Forget about my life before them. I don't blame them. I'd like to forget. Why would anyone want to remember that?
I hope this helps with some of your questions, he says.
It does. I'm glad I called you. It was Anna's idea.
Carrick smiles. She's one brave woman, Christian.
He glances once more at Grace. She nods, and it looks like she's giving him permission. He hands me another envelope. With a puzzled look at both of them, I open it. Inside is a birth certificate. State of Michigan, Certificate of Live Birth. State file number 121-83-757899. Date filed June 29th, 1983. Child's name, first, middle, last suffix. Christian Bustai. Date of birth, June 18th, 1983. Gender, male. Child's birthplace, Detroit, Wayne County. Mother's name before first married, Aletka Bustai. Mother's age, 19. Mother's birthplace, Budapest, Hungary. Father's name, unknown. Father's age, unknown. Father's birthplace, unknown. I hereby certify that the above is a true and correct representation of the birth facts on file with the Division for Vital Records, Michigan Department of Community Health. Christian. A tremor runs up my spine. My name. And the crack whore. She has a name. From nowhere, I hear her pimp asshole shouting, Ella. Ella, short for Aletka. His usual epithet was bitch. I shake off the thought. Why are you giving this to me now? My voice is hoarse as I gaze at my parents.
I found it with the letters in the drawings. In Mrs. Collier's letter, she calls you Christian with a K. So if you wondered...
My mother's voice trails off.
Why did you change the spelling?
Because you are a gift to us from God.
I stare at her, stupefied. A gift? Me? All the shit I gave the two people standing in front of me, and this is what they think?
We felt we owed him. You've always been a gift, Christian, Carrick murmurs.
Tears pinch the back of my eyes, and I take a deep breath.
A gift.
Children are a gift. Always.
Grace's maternal adoration is plain in her glistening eyes, and I know what she's left unsaid. That I'll find this out for myself in a few months. Leaning over, she smooths my hair off my forehead. I return her smile and, standing, pull her into my arms.
Thanks, Mom. You're welcome, son.
Carrick hugs us both.
I close my eyes, and fighting back my tears, I accept it. Unconditional love. From my parents. As it should be. Enough. I pull away. I'll read the letters later. My voice is gruff with emotion.
Okay.
We should get back to the others. I mutter. Have you remembered anything? Carrick asks. I shake my head. Maybe you will, maybe you won't. But don't sweat it, son. You have us, you have your family. And like your mother says, the Colliers were good people. Gently, he squeezes my arm, his warmth and affection radiating through my body. We head back into the main living room, but I'm moving in slow motion, disconnected from my reality, my head ready to explode with all these revelations. I scan the room for Anna. She's standing with Elliot and Kate at the kitchen counter, eating some canapés. From somewhere deep in my brain, the part that stores my earliest memories, comes a fragment, a vision of a family gathered around a wooden table, laughing, teasing, eating, macaroni and cheese, the Colliers. I'm distracted from my reminiscence by the sight of Anna with a flute of pink champagne in her hand. Junior. I move to take the alcohol from her, but Kate steps into my path. Kate? I acknowledge her. Christian, she responds in her usual abrupt way. Your meds, Mrs. Gray. My tone is a warning as I stare at the glass in Anna's hand, trying not to give anything away. But Anna narrows her eyes and raises her chin in defiance. Grace collects a full flute from Elliot, walks up to Anna, and whispers something in her ear. They exchange a furtive smile, and they clink glasses. Mom. I grimace at both of them, but they ignore me. Hot shot. Elliot claps me on the back and hands me a glass. Bro. I keep my eyes on Anna as Elliot and I take a seat on the couch. Jesus, you must have been worried sick. Yeah. Glad that asshole is finally caught. His ass is on its way to jail. Yeah. Elliot frowns. You missed a great game. Game? He wants to talk baseball? Is he trying to distract me? He's pissed the Mariners lost to the Rangers today, but I find it difficult to concentrate on what he's saying. My attention is locked on Anna. Carrick joins Anna, and Grace kisses him on the cheek, then moves to sit with Mia and Ethan, who are looking mighty cozy on the couch, leaving Anna to talk to Dad. My father and my wife enjoy a lively, whispered conversation. What are they talking about? Me? You're not listening to a word I'm saying, asshole. Elliot pulls me back into our conversation. Sure, the Rangers. He punches my arm. You get a pass, he says. You've had a tough few days. You know, you two should come see your house. Yeah, I'd like that. Anna and I were planning to, and then all hell broke loose. Anna and Mia. Fuck. Elliot's expression is grim. Glad your wife took that asshole down. I nod. Hi, Christian. Ethan joins us, and I'm grateful for the interruption. Watch the game? Elliot asks, and they fall into a debate about Beltre hitting a homer against the Mariners. I tune them out as Anna comes toward us.
It's great to see everyone,
she says to Carrick as she sits next to me. One sip. I scold her under my breath. And you've had that. I take the glass from her hand.
Yes, sir.
She flutters her eyelashes, her eyes darkening and suddenly full of promise. My body stirs in response and I ignore it. Jesus, we're in company. I wind my arm around her shoulders and shoot her a quick look. Behave, Anna. Anna is curled up in bed, watching me as I strip. My parents think you walk on water. I toss my t-shirt onto the chair.
Good thing you know differently.
Oh, I don't know.
Did they fill in the gaps for you?
Some. I lived with the Colliers for 2 months while Mom and Dad waited for the paperwork. They were already approved for adoption because of Elliot, but the waits required by law to see if I had any living relatives who wanted to claim me.
How do you feel about that?
About having no living relatives? Relieved. Fuck that. If they were anything like the crack whore. I shake my head. Thank God for Mom and Dad. They were, are, a gift to me. I don my pajama pants and climb into bed, cuddling up to my wife, beyond grateful that she's here with me. She inclines her head, her expression warm, but I know she's expecting me to say more. It's coming back to me, I muse. Mac and cheese, yeah. I remember the food. Mrs. Collier could cook, and at least we know now why that fucker is so hung up on my family. A hazy memory surfaces. Wait. Didn't she used to sit by my bed? She's tucking me into a small cot bed and holding a book. Fuck!
What?
It makes sense now.
What?
Baby Bird. Mrs. Collier used to call me Baby Bird. Anna looks puzzled.
That makes sense?
The note, the ransom note that fucker left. It went something like, do you know who I am? Because I know who you are, Baby Bird. Anna still looks confused. It's from a kid's book. The Colliers had it. It was called Are You My Mother? Shit. I imagine the cover in my mind's eye, the little bird and the sad old dog. I loved that book. Mrs. Collier used to read it to me. Christ, he knew. That fucker knew. Though I have no memory of him, thank God.
Will you tell the police?
Yes, I will. Christ knows what Clark will do with that information. I exhale. They're here, in my brain. The missing memories. It's a relief. And once more, I'm grateful that my parents came to see me this evening. They've dislodged whatever was holding these recollections back. Anna smiles, relieved for me, I think. But enough of my fucked up history. I owe Anna an explanation. But where to start? She might be too tired. She's worked hard to entertain my family. Thank you for this evening.
For what?
Catering for my family at a moment's notice.
Don't thank me, thank Mia and Mrs. Jones. She keeps the pantry well stocked.
Anna, take a compliment. She's such an exasperating woman sometimes, but I let it go. How are you feeling, Mrs. Gray?
Good. How are you feeling?
I'm fine. Anna's eyes light up and her fingers dance over my belly. I laugh and grab her hand. Oh no, don't get any ideas. Her lips purse in disappointment, and she stares up at me through her lashes again. Anna, 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 what am I going to do with you? I kiss her hair.
I have some ideas.
She wriggles beside me and stops suddenly, her face scrunched in pain. Anna, you're hurt. She smiles quickly to reassure me. Baby, you've been through enough. Besides, I have a bedtime story for you. She looks up, expectant. You wanted to know. I close my eyes and swallow as my mind drifts back to my adolescence. I'm 15 again. Picture this. An adolescent boy looking to earn some extra money so he can continue his secret drinking habit. I open my eyes, but I can still see myself as I was back then. A tall but scrawny teen in cut-off shorts with a shock of copper hair and a belligerent fuck-off attitude. That was me. Hell. I shift onto my side so Anna and I are lying facing each other. Her eyes are wide and full of questions. I take a deep breath. So, I was in the backyard at the Lincolns, clearing some rubble and trash from the extension Mr. Lincoln had just added to their place. Closing my eyes again, I'm there once more, The scent of summer flowers hangs thick in the air. Insects buzz and I swat them away. The heat from the midday sun is beating down on me, so much so that I strip off my t-shirt. And there's Elena, wearing the lowest cut dress I've ever seen. It barely sheathes her body. When I chance a look at Anna, she's still staring at me, hanging on my every word. It was a hot summer day. I was working hard. I chuckle, remembering this was probably one of the few days I ever did any manual labor. It was backbreaking work, shifting that rubble. I was on my own, and Mrs. Lincoln appeared out of nowhere and brought me some lemonade. We exchanged small talk, and I made some smart-ass remark, and she slapped me. She slapped me so hard. My hand moves automatically to my cheek as I remember the unfamiliar sting. No one had ever slapped me like that.
"My eyes are here, boy."
Mrs. Lincoln points two fingers at her face. She caught me staring at her tits. Well, you couldn't miss them. Fuck. I was hard, instantly, to bursting. Mrs. Lincoln's gaze drifts to my pants. Fuck, my boner. It's humiliating.
"Like that, do you?"
She drawls, scarlet lips lifting in a sexy smile. I think I'm gonna come in my pants. But then she kissed me, and when she finished, she slapped me again. Her mouth is hot, wet, strong, everything I ever wet dreamed about. I'd never been kissed before or hit like that. Anna gasps. "Fuck. Do you want to hear this?" Anna stares, round-eyed, and her words rush out in a breathless whisper.
"Only if you want to tell me."
"I'm trying to give you some context." She nods, but she looks like she's seen a fucking ghost, and I hesitate. Should I continue? I look deeply into her startled eyes, and all I see are more questions. She's hungry for information. She's always hungry for more. I roll onto my back and stare at the ceiling and continue my sorry tale. Well, naturally, I was confused and angry and horny as hell. I mean, a hot older woman comes onto you like that. It was the first time I'd ever been kissed. Ever. It was heaven and hell, too. She went back into the house, leaving me in the backyard. She acted as if nothing had happened. I was at a total loss. I wanted to rub one out right there, but of course I couldn't. So I went back to work, loading the rubble into the dumpster. When I left that evening, she asked me to come back the next day. She didn't mention what had happened. The next day I went back. I couldn't wait to see her again. I'm whispering, as if I were in the confessional. She didn't touch me when she kissed me. Only my face, where she grabbed me. It was a revelation. I turned to face Anna. "You have to understand, my life was hell on earth. I was a walking hard-on, 15 years old, tall for my age, hormones raging. The girls at school, they were interested, and so was I, but I couldn't bear to be touched. I fought everyone off and pushed everyone away with my rage. I was angry, so fucking angry at everyone, at myself, my folks. I had no friends. My therapist at the time was a total asshole. My folks, they kept me on a tight leash. They didn't understand. I gaze at the ceiling, thinking how solicitous Carrick and Grace had been this evening. I just couldn't bear anyone touching me. I couldn't. Couldn't bear anyone near me. I used to fight. Fuck, did I fight. I got into some god-awful brawls. I was expelled from a couple of schools. But it was a way to let off steam, to tolerate some kind of physical contact. I clench my fists, remembering one particular brawl. Wild, that asshole, picking on smaller kids.
Well, you get the idea. And when she kissed me, she only grabbed my face. She didn't touch me. It was such a relief to finally experience that kind of contact, and it was so fucking exciting. My life changed in that moment. Everything changed. Well, the next day I went back to the house, not knowing what to expect. And I'll spare you the gory details, but there was more of the same.
I could whip a savage like you into shape.
Elena's drawl echoes in my mind. Savage? She knows. She sees me. The bad seed. And that's how our relationship started. Shaking off the memory, I turned to face Anna once more. And you know something, Anna? My world came into focus. Sharp and clear. Everything. It was exactly what I needed. She was a breath of fresh air. Making the decisions, taking all that shit away from me, letting me breathe. And even when it was over, my world stayed in focus because of her. And it stayed that way. Until I met you. Suddenly a flood of emotion wells inside me, almost engulfing me. Anna, my love. Reaching up, I smooth a stray tendril of her hair behind her ear, because I want no need to touch her. You turned my world on its head. Suddenly I see her pale, sad face, leaving me as the elevator doors close. My world was ordered, calm and controlled. Then you came into my life with your smart mouth, your innocence, your beauty, and your quiet temerity, and everything before you was just dull, empty, mediocre. It was nothing. Anna sucks in a breath. I fell in love, I whisper, and strum my knuckles across her cheek.
So did I.
She responds, and I feel her breath on my face. I know.
You do?
Yes. You're still here with me, listening to this sorry, disturbing story. You saved me. Her face breaks into a shy smile.
Finally,
she murmurs. And it's put everything into perspective for me. When I was younger, Elena was the center of my world. There was nothing I wouldn't do for her. And she did a lot for me. She stopped my drinking, made me work hard at school. You know, she gave me a coping mechanism I hadn't had before, allowed me to experience things that I never thought I could.
Touch?
Anna asks. After a fashion? Anna's brows pucker together, and her eyes are full of new questions. I have no choice but to tell her. If you grow up with a wholly negative self-image, thinking you're some kind of reject, an unlovable savage, you think you deserve to be beaten. I pause, gauging her reaction. Anna, it's much easier to wear your pain on the outside. It's much harder on the inside. I don't dwell on that thought. She channeled my anger, mostly inward. I realize that now. Dr. Flynn's been on and on about this for some time. It was only recently that I saw our relationship for what it was. You know, on my birthday. Anna grimaces. For her, that side of our relationship was about sex and control, and a lonely woman finding some kind of comfort with her boy toy.
But you like control,
she says. Yes, I do. I always will, Anna. It's who I am. I surrendered it for a brief while. Let someone make all my decisions for me. I couldn't do it myself. I wasn't in a fit state. But through my submission to her, I found myself and found the strength to take charge of my life, take control and make my own decisions.
Become a dom?
Yes.
Your decision?
Yes.
Dropping out of Harvard?
My decision, and it was the best decision I ever made. Until I met you.
Me?
Yes. The best decision I ever made was marrying you.
I smile at her.
Not starting your company?
She whispers. I shake my head.
Not learning to fly?
No, baby. You. I stroke her cheek once more, marveling at its softness. She knew.
She knew what?
That I was head over heels in love with you. She encouraged me to go down to Georgia to see you, and I'm glad she did. She thought you'd freak out and leave, which you did. Anna blinks, and the color drains from her cheeks. She thought I needed all the trappings of the lifestyle I enjoyed.
The Dom?
Yes. It enabled me to keep everyone at arm's length, gave me control, and kept me detached, or so I thought. I'm sure you've worked out why.
Your birth mom?
I didn't want to be hurt again. And then you left me. I see the elevator doors closing on Anna once more, and I remember sitting on my foyer floor for what seemed like hours. And I was a mess. I take a deep breath. I've avoided intimacy for so long. I don't know how to do this.
You're doing fine.
She sculpts my lips with her finger, and I press a kiss to her fingertip as we gaze at each other. And as ever, I'm drowning in her blue eyes.
Do you miss it?
She asks. Miss it?
That lifestyle?
Yes, I do. From her look, I'm not sure she believes me. But only insofar as I miss the control it brings, and frankly, your stupid stunt. I halt. That saved my sister. You mad, bad, beautiful woman. That's how I know.
No?
She frowns. Really know that you love me.
You do?
Yes, because you risked so much for me, for my family. Her frown deepens and I can't resist. Reaching over, I skim over her brow with my fingertip. You have a V here when you frown. It's very soft to kiss. Her expression lightens. I can behave so badly and yet you're still here, I murmur.
Why are you surprised I'm still here? I told you I wasn't going to leave you.
Because of the way I behaved when you told me you were pregnant. Of its own accord, my finger traces her brow and down her cheek. You were right. I am an adolescent. She purses her lips, contrite.
Christian, I said some awful things.
I place my finger over her mouth. Hush. I deserved to hear them. Besides, this is my bedtime story. I roll onto my back again. When you told me you were pregnant, I stop, fighting my shame and trying to find the words. I thought it would be just you and me for a while. I'd considered children, but only in the abstract. I had this vague idea we'd have a child sometime in the future. You're still so young, and I know you're quietly ambitious. Well, you pulled the rug out from under me. Christ, was that unexpected. Never in a million years, when I asked you what was wrong, did I expect you to be pregnant. I sigh, disgusted at myself. I was so mad, mad at you, mad at myself, mad at everyone. And it took me back, that feeling of nothing being in my control. I had to get out. I went to see Flynn, but he was at some school parents' evening. I glance at her as I arch a brow, hoping that she sees the funny side of that. And of course she does.
Ironic,
she says, and we both smirk. So I walked and walked and walked, and I just found myself at the salon. Elena was leaving. She was surprised to see me, and truth be told, I was surprised to find myself there. She could tell I was mad and asked me if I wanted a drink. We went to a quiet bar I know and had a bottle of wine. She apologized for the way she behaved the last time she saw us. She's hurt that my mom will have nothing to do with her anymore. It's narrowed her social circle. But she understands. We talked about the business, which is doing fine in spite of the recession. I mentioned that you wanted kids.
I thought you let her know I was pregnant.
No, I didn't.
Why didn't you tell me that?
I shrug. I never got the chance. You were too angry.
Yes, you did.
I couldn't find you the next morning, Anna, and when I did, you were so mad at me.
I was.
Anyway, at some point in the evening, about halfway through the second bottle, she leaned over to touch me, and I froze. I throw my arm over my eyes. I'm mortified. Spit it out, Gray. She saw that I recoiled from her. It shocked both of us. Anna tugs at my arm, so I turn and gaze at her. I'm sorry, baby.
What?
Anna asks. I swallow, trying to fight the awkwardness. She made a pass at me. Anna's face transforms. She's appalled and mad again. Fuck. It was a moment suspended in time. I continue hastily. She saw my expression and she realized how far she'd crossed the line. I said, no, I haven't thought of her like that for years, and besides, I swallow again, my voice soft. I love you. I told her I'd love my wife. Anna stares at me, silent. Oh, my love, what are you thinking? I stumble on. She backed right off, apologized again, made it seem like a joke. I mean, she said she's happy with Isaac and with the business, and she doesn't bear either of us any ill will. She said she missed my friendship, but she could see that my life was with you now. And how awkward that was, given what happened the last time we were all in the same room. I couldn't have agreed with her more. We said our goodbyes, our final goodbyes. I said I wouldn't see her again, and she went on her way.
Did you kiss?
No. Good God, no. I couldn't bear to be that close to her. I was miserable. I wanted to come home to you, but I knew I'd behaved badly. I stayed and finished the bottle, then started on the bourbon. While I was drinking, I remembered your saying to me some time ago, if that was my son. And I got to thinking about Junior and about how Elena and I started. And it made me feel uncomfortable. I'd never thought of it like that before.
That's it?
Anna breathes. Pretty much.
Oh.
Oh?
It's over?
Yes, it's been over since I laid eyes on you. I finally realized it that night, and so did she.
I'm sorry,
she says. What for?
Being so angry the next day?
Baby, I understand angry. Angry is my middle name. I sigh. You see, Anna, I want you to myself. I don't want to share you. What we have, I've never had before. I want to be the center of your universe for a while, at least.
You are,
she objects.
That's not going to change.
Anna, I whisper gently with a resigned smile. That's just not true.
How can it be?
Tears well in her eyes.
Shit, don't cry, Anna. Please don't cry.
I lay my hand on her cheek.
I'm sorry.
Her lip trembles and I brush my thumb over it as my heart swells.
No, Anna, no. Don't be sorry. You'll have someone else to love as well. And you're right, that's how it should be. Blip will love you too. You'll be the center of Blip's, Junior's world. Children love their parents unconditionally, Christian.
I feel the blood drain from my face.
That's how they come into the world,
Anna continues, her passion clear.
Programmed to love. All babies, even you. Think about that children's book you liked when you were small. You still wanted your mom. You loved her.
Ella.
Hey, maggot, let's find your cars.
I'm on the edge of a dark maelstrom, teetering over it. I fist my hand beneath my chin as I gaze at my beautiful wife, floundering for something to say as I fight the current to swim away from the pain. "No," I whisper. Anna's tears spill down her cheeks.
"Yes, you did. Of course you did. It wasn't an option. That's why you're so hurt."
All the air has left the room and my body. I'm being sucked down.
"That's why you're able to love me,"
she says.
"Forgive her. She had her own world of pain to deal with. She was a shitty mother, and you loved her."
I'm lost in the vortex. It's choking me.
"Hey, Maggot, shall we bake a cake?"
Mommy smiles and ruffles my hair.
"Here you go."
Mommy gives me a brush. She smiles down at me. Mommy is pretty. She has long hair. She's singing. Happy. "There you go, Gray. There were happy times. I used to brush her hair. She was pretty. One look at you and no one would doubt that. She was a shitty mother." Anna nods, her tearful eyes brimming with compassion. I close my eyes and confess. I'm scared I'll be a shitty father. Anna's fingers skim over my face, reassuring me.
"Christian, do you think for 1 minute I'd let you be a shitty father?"
I open my eyes and stare at her. And there it is, the Anastasia Steele glint, so aptly named. My warrior fighting for me, with me, against me, for our child. She takes my breath away. I grin in awe. "No, I don't think you would." I stroke her face. "God, you're strong, Mrs. Gray. I love you so much." I kiss her forehead. "I didn't know I could."
"Oh, Christian,"
she whispers. "Now, that's the end of your bedtime story."
"That's some story."
"How's your head?"
"My head?"
"Does it hurt?"
"No."
"Good. I think you should sleep now." Anna is not convinced. "Sleep," I exclaim. "You need it."
"I have one question,"
Anna says. "Oh? What?"
"Why have you suddenly become all forthcoming, for want of a better word? You're telling me all this when getting information out of you is normally a pretty harrowing and trying experience."
"It is?"
"You know it is."
"Why am I being forthcoming?" "I can't say. Seeing you practically dead on the cold concrete, maybe." I flinch, remembering Anna on the ground outside that derelict warehouse where Hyde was holding my sister. It's traumatic, so I turn my thoughts in a happier direction. To Junior. The fact I'm going to be a father? I don't know. You said you wanted to know, and I don't want Elena to come between us. She can't. She's the past, and I've said that to you so many times.
If she hadn't made a pass at you, would you still be friends?
Anna asks.
That's more than one question. Sorry, you don't have to tell me.
She blushes, and it's good to see some color in her cheeks.
You've already volunteered more than I ever thought you would.
No, I don't think so. But she's felt like unfinished business since my birthday. She stepped over the line, and I'm done. Please believe me, I'm not going to see her again. You said she's a hard limit for you. That's a term I understand. Anna smiles.
Good night, Christian. Thank you for the enlightening bedtime story.
She leans over and touches her lips to mine, her tongue teasing me. My body ignites and I pull away. Don't. I am desperate to make love to you. I whisper through my desire.
Then do.
No, you need to rest. And it's late. Go to sleep. I switch off the bedside light and we're surrounded by the darkness.
I love you unconditionally, Christian.
Anna whispers as she snuggles up to me. I know, I whisper, bathing in her light. You and my parents, unconditionally.
Sunday, September 18th, 2011. It's almost midnight. Apart from some exercise, I've enjoyed a quiet day with my wife. Our only excursion has been to see Ray, who is definitely on the mend. Other than that, I've insisted that Anna stay in bed and rest. She's acquiesced, but has been reading a couple of manuscripts, and no amount of cajoling on my part could persuade her otherwise. Mrs. Jones has returned from her sister's, and this evening she prepared a hearty three-course meal for the two of us. She seems as anxious for Anna's well-being as I am. Anna fell asleep just after 10. I've caught up on work, and now I'm poring over the notes that Mrs. Collier wrote to my mother and father while I was in her care. She has a neat and tidy hand, and her words spark small reminiscences that cast light into the dark corners of my memory.
Christian won't let me wash him, but he does know how to wash himself. It has taken 2 baths to get him clean, and I've had to teach him how to wash his hair. He will not tolerate us touching him at all. Christian had a better day today. He still refuses to talk. We don't know if he can or if he's unable. He has a temper, though. The other kids are quite scared of him. Christian still doesn't let any of us touch him. He has a meltdown if we do. Christian is hungry. He has a huge appetite for such a skinny little kid. His favorites are pasta and ice cream. Our daughter Phoebe has taken a shine to Christian. She dotes on him, and he's tolerating her attention. She sits and draws with him. I don't think he's had a great deal of experience drawing. Where Phoebe goes, Christian will follow. Today, Christian had a meltdown. He does not like to be parted from his blanket, but it's filthy. I let him sit and watch it in the washing machine. This seemed to be the only thing that calmed him down.
The memories flare and flicker to the surface in fits and starts, but it's the feeling of being overwhelmed that resonates most with me. I was in a strange place with a strange family. It must have been horribly bewildering. No wonder I chose to forget that time. But having read through the notes, I know I didn't come to any harm there, and I do remember Phoebe. She would sing to me. Silly songs. She was kind and especially sweet to me. I'm grateful that my parents kept these letters. They remind me just how far removed I am from that frightened little boy. I am not him anymore. He no longer exists. I contemplate sharing these with Anna, then remember her reaction to the photographs. Her sorrow as she gazed at that starved, neglected child, and they'd remind her of that asshole Hyde, and how much he and I have in common. To hell with that. She had enough to contend with over the last few days. I tuck the letters, drawings, and the photographs into a manila folder marked Christian and file them safely away in my filing cabinet for another day. Maybe when she's fully recovered. Besides, I need to talk this through with Flynn, and I should do that before I share them with Anna. She's my wife, not my therapist. I lock the filing cabinet and check the time. It's late, and Anna is dozing when I slip into bed and pull her into my arms. She mumbles something unintelligible while I breathe in her soothing scent and close my eyes. My dream catcher. Monday, September 19th, 2011. Anna is curled up beside me, still out for the count. It's 7:16 a.m. I'm normally up earlier, but the last few days have taken a toll on me, too. It could also be the workout I did yesterday. Not only did I go for a run, but I did 2 circuits of the gym and an hour's hard rowing. I smile at the ceiling while I contemplate going for another run this morning. I have all this excess energy. Perhaps I should let Anna have her wicked way with me. The thought is appealing. Fuck. Too appealing.
Taking a deep breath, I bring my wayward body to heal, grab my phone, and ease myself out of bed. Maybe I'll come back when she's awake. Right now, I'm hungry.
Good morning, Mr. Gray.
Gail is in the kitchen. If she's surprised that I'm still in my pajamas, she doesn't give anything away. She moves straight to the gaja to make my coffee. Good morning, Mrs. Jones.
How's Mrs. Gray this morning?
Still asleep. She nods with a satisfied smile.
What can I get you?
An omelet, please.
Bacon, mushroom, and cheese?
Sounds great. She slides over a cup of freshly brewed coffee. I start leafing through the Seattle Times, glad that my wife isn't on the front page, and wonder what Anna and I will do today, when I spot the real estate section. Of course. Gail. I get her attention once more. Depending on how Anna's feeling, I thought we might go out to the new house later. Could you rustle up a picnic for us?
It would be a pleasure, sir. I'll ask Taylor to take it down to the R8 when it's ready.
Thank you. I call Andrea to inform her I'm not coming into the office and ask her to reschedule any of today's meetings. She's unfazed.
Yes, Mr. Gray. How is Mrs. Gray?
She asks tentatively. Much improved, thank you.
That's good to hear.
I'll be on my cell today if you need me. My omelet is everything that I hoped it would be. I am happily eating when I look up. Anna has appeared in the doorway. She looks well rested. The bruise on her cheek has faded, but she's fully dressed, as if she's going out somewhere. She's wearing a skirt that borders on indecent. She's all legs and high fuck-me heels. I lose my train of thought. Good morning, Mrs. Gray. Going somewhere? I'm hoarse.
Work.
She throws me a smile that illuminates the room. I scoff at her audacity. I don't think so. Dr. Singh said a week off.
Christian, I'm not spending the day lounging in bed on my own.
She flashes me a quick, heated look, which I feel in all the right places.
So I may as well go to work. Good morning, Gail. Mrs. Gray.
Mrs. Jones flattens her lips, attempting to hide her amusement.
Would you like some breakfast? Please. Granola? I'd prefer scrambled eggs with whole wheat toast. Very good, Mrs. Gray.
Gail replies with a broad grin. Anna, you are not going to work. I'm amused that she thinks she should.
But
no, it's simple. Don't argue. I'm your boss's boss, and the answer is no. She narrows her eyes, but her glare becomes a frown as she scrutinizes my attire.
Are you going to work?
I shake my head and glance down at my pajama pants. No.
It is Monday, right?
I grin. Last time I looked.
Are you playing hooky?
From her tone, I think she's intrigued and slightly incredulous. I'm not leaving you here on your own to get into trouble, and Dr. Singh said it would be a week before you could go back to work. Remember? She sits down on the bar stool beside me, her skirt riding up higher, exposing her upper thighs, and I lose my train of thought. Again. You look good. I murmur, and she crosses her legs. Very good. Especially here. I cannot resist running my finger across the exposed skin between her stocking tops and the hem of her skirt. This skirt is very short, I murmur. I can't keep my eyes off your legs, Mrs. Gray. I'm not sure I approve.
Is it? I hadn't noticed.
Anna waves a nonchalant hand. Yanking my gaze away from her legs, I look her in the eye. Her cheeks color. She's such a hopeless liar. Really, Mrs. Gray? I raise a brow. I'm not sure this look is suitable for the workplace.
Well, since I'm not going to work, that's a moot point,
she says stiffly. Moot?
Moot,
she mouths, and I hide my smile. There's that word again. I take another bite of my omelet. I have a better idea.
You do.
My eyes meet hers, and suddenly it's there. That look I know so well, her desire responding to mine. The air between us sparks with our own special electricity. She inhales, and I whisper, reeling her in. We can go see how Elliot's getting on with the house. A momentary flash of disappointment crosses her face, but then she smiles at my teasing.
I'd love to.
Good.
Don't you have to work?
No. Roz is back from Taiwan. That all went well. Today, everything's fine. There are certain advantages to being your own boss.
I thought you were going to Taiwan.
Anna, you were in the hospital. There was no way I was leaving you.
Oh.
Yeah, oh. So today I'm spending some quality time with my wife. I take a sip of Mrs. Jones's great coffee.
Quality time?
Anna's yearning threads through each syllable. Oh, baby. Gail places Anna's scrambled eggs in front of her. Quality time, I murmur. Anna's eyes dart from my lips to her breakfast, and her breakfast wins. Damn, thwarted by scrambled eggs. It's good to see you eat, I murmur, and pushing my plate aside, I step off my bar stool and kiss Anna's hair. I'm going to shower.
Can I come and scrub your back?
She asks through a mouthful of breakfast. No, eat. I stride off to the bathroom, feeling her eyes on me. As I exit, I strip off my shirt, and I don't know if it's to tempt her to join me in the shower or not. Keeping my hands off her is getting harder and harder in more ways than one.
Gray, grow up.
Anna has insisted that we go visit Ray first, but we don't stay long. Mr. Rodriguez is with him, watching a British soccer match from yesterday. Manchester United versus Chelsea. Manchester United is 2 goals up, which seems to please Mr. Rodriguez enormously, judging by his cheer. I sigh. Try as I might, I don't care for soccer. Anna takes pity on me and lets Ray know that we're off. Thank heavens. I sit back and relax as we cruise in my R8 to the new house. I'm excited to see the destruction that Elliot has wrought, and hopefully the beginnings of what our home will be. Anna has changed her sky-high heels for more sensible flats. She's tapping her feet to a Crosby, Stills, and Nash song that blares over the Audi's sound system, looking happy to be out and about. 2 days of enforced bed rest has been good for her. She has color in her cheeks and a soft, sweet smile for me when I glance at her. And she seems to have set aside her recent horrific encounter with the evil Hyde. I push him out of my mind. Don't go there, Gray. I want to preserve my good mood. Since I unburdened my soul a couple of nights ago, I've felt happier. I had no idea that spilling my guts to my wife would have such a beneficial effect. I don't know if it's because I've finally laid the ghost of Elena Lincoln to rest, or if it's because my parents have provided me with some of the missing pieces from the incomplete puzzle that was my former life, but my heart is lighter somehow, freer even, but tethered and as steadfast as ever to the beautiful woman beside me. Anna knows me. She refracts my darkness and turns it to brilliant light. I shake my head at my fanciful thoughts, flowery gray. She's still here, in spite of all that I've done. The warmth of her love spreads through my veins. Reaching over, I squeeze her leg, then trail my fingers over her exposed flesh above her thigh high, relishing the feel of her skin. I'm glad you didn't change. Anna covers my hand with her own.
Are you going to continue to tease me?
I didn't know that's what I was doing, but hey, I'll play. Maybe.
Why?
Because I can. I beam at her.
Two can play that game,
she whispers. I move my fingers up her inner thigh. Bring it on, Mrs. Gray. She takes my hand and places it on my knee.
Well, you can keep your hands to yourself.
she says primly.
As you wish, Mrs. Gray.
I cannot hide my smile. I love playful Anna. I love Anna. Period.
Stopping at the gates to our house, I press the entry code into the keypad. The metal gates swing slowly open, creaking a protest at being disturbed. They need replacing, and we'll get around to it eventually. Speeding along the driveway, I wish I'd taken the top down on the car. The tall grass in the meadow is golden beneath the September sun, and the trees lining the drive are all decked in the colors of the coming fall. The sound in the distance is a brilliant blue. It's idyllic, and it's ours. As the lane meanders around a wide curve, the house appears, surrounded by a number of Elliot's construction trucks. It's hidden behind scaffolding, and several of Elliot's crew are at work on the roof. I park outside the portico, switch off the engine, and turn to Anna. Let's go find Elliot. I'm buzzing to see what he's accomplished so far.
Is he here?
I hope so. I'm paying him enough.
She laughs, and we both exit the car.